And the last thing anyone should ever want is to be on social media owned by a billionaire that spies on you.
Alleging that Amazon abused its position as a leading online marketplace in the U.S., but then using the data from these independent sellers to better make their own private label products.
So long as you love your friend more than you hate him, he can make life worse for you and you'll stay there, making things good for business customers by making them bad for end users.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Welcome back to the Open Markets Podcast, episode 10. My name is Eric FJ.
My name is Sink.
And I'm
here in the Cypherpunk house. Like, we're recording live in front of a small audience.
Woo!
Yeah.
What's up, Cypherpunk house? Yeah.
And I'm also here with Eugene. So we're doing a recording in the flesh.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Eugene. We'll give people like a couple sentences about you.
Yeah, my name is Eugene. I'm an ex-technical lead at NostraDev. Now it's Freedom Tech Company. So I've been involved with different Nostra clients, and I was part of Sovereign Engineering Cohort 2. And I'm recently now in London with Singh here.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us as a co-host on this wonderful show where everything's made up and the points don't matter. You want to roll into the zaps?
Yes, sir.
At number one here, we got JBN. 2,000 sats. That might be one of our top zaps of all time. Oshi doing business intuitively with Bitcoin and Nostr. Interesting episode. Thank you, sir, JBN. Next up, we got Perminerd. Perminerd is Oshi's co-host on the Yada podcast. It's also one of my Canadian brethren. Says, boost, two lightning emojis. He says, after I got over my debilitating jealousy, this was a very enjoyable episode. We highly recommend. And then there's some automatic text that goes in there. It tells us exactly what he just did and what I just said. So I'm not going to repeat all that. There's also like a little link here that says boostmebitch.com. We may have to link that or click it with caution in like on a secure computer or something. Where are you bringing us, Perminerd?
Nice domain name, though. I do applaud the boost me bitch.
Yeah.
Hans Aveda, a great podcast. Really liked how you explained how Nostr rails and encouraging to implement it on marketplaces. Thank you very much, sir. We also have Zap streamers that I kind of figured out how we can see, you know, who's doing the Zap streaming. And we have one from, I might butcher the name again, like it's Juraj. He's also on Nostr. He also wrote a book that I bought like in Prague called Tamers of Entropy.
Mm.
Only read the first 15 pages-ish. It's a little bit of a mindfuck because the main character has the same name as I do. So it feels too relatable to sometimes keep reading. But it's a nice science fiction or like fictional novel. Not too thick. And it was also the artwork was also made by No Good Kid. Met him in Prague as well. Had a little chat about that.
What is the difference between No Good and the No Good Kid?
They're two different people.
Okay. No, unrelated or related somewhat?
Yeah, it's crazy that they share the same name and are both graphic designers to that extent. Not sure, you know, what the relationship or like the idea there is.
It's not a father. It's not a father son thing. It's not No Good love child.
No. Definitely okay. Not. But yeah, no, like. Very nice artwork. Also, it came in a Ziploc bag that said like evidence, you know, like it was a very well packaged, the book. Like, so look forward to finishing it once I have a bit more of the time.
I love the title too, Tamers of Entropy. It kind of feels like that's what we're all trying to do as we develop these Nostr apps and open rails and stuff like that. There's so many ideas, there's so many possibilities, but if you're going to turn it into a product, it's just taming entropy. Constantly. Do you feel that, Eugene?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking also about kind of creating order out of chaos, right? In a way, you know, trying to kind of create, well, connection through the chaotic nibs. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about herding cats the other day. Everyone is, especially if they end up on Nostr or Bitcoin, they have a very independent mindset, as they should. All right, we're here because none of us wanted anyone to tell us what to do. But then, you know, we try to all get together and make something. It feels like you're herding cats. You're like, you're a cat, you're a cat, you're a cat. Here, come here. Let's do something together. I kind of want to go do my own thing. It's just constant entropy, constant taming.
Yeah, and I think it's worth keeping that in mind. You know, it's easy to maybe be slightly dissatisfied with this rather slow progress sometime in different apps, right, or different clients. But I think given the bottom-up nature of it, right, I think that in itself, that it actually works, is already quite an achievement, you know?
100%. And the fact that we've done anything here means that it's special.
Yeah. No, like fully agree. Every time I bring like a new developer into Noster and I point them to like the NIPS repository, it always ends up horrible, right? Because there's too much information there. Like people just get flooded. And it's like the idea of like, yeah, you have to find, you know, your path and a way through the chaos in a way that you can manage it, right? Like it will always be an influx of extra information that you have to deal with. So yeah, just do your own thing and figure out what works for you. Is usually like a good way to go. But in general, the idea of pointing people to a place where like we're doing with the open markets idea, where we can point people to a specific place and they're not going to be immediately, you know, flooded with too much information that they leave. I think that's also something that we're trying to push a bit with the open markets idea.
Yeah, we're aiming for less abandonware, more projects that actually, you know, get some momentum and keep their development teams involved and keep moving towards a purpose. And I think it helps when you gather folks around a mission. And it doesn't have to be markets, it could be anything related to freedom tech, I think. But that's, you know, that's all we're trying to tame that entropy just enough so that people can have a path, you know, towards purpose, towards a mission, and make things that aren't just abandoned for the next shiny bouncing ball that they run into on Noster. Because if we do that, we're not really going to get anywhere. We're just going to have a bunch of shiny bouncing balls that don't really do much. That's part of what we try to do. So tell me, where are you guys sitting right now? What is the site for Monkhouse? I've seen it on Noster. I've seen different folks that have, you know, tagged themselves as being involved in it, but I have no idea about anything about the place you guys are sitting.
Like this would be the exact right moment to drag somebody in, but I'll try
Infinite
to
co-hosts.
Yeah, I think it's like a place that Bitcoiners in the city of London can come together to, and it's a gathering place to spread information, but also to connect with other people, right? Like we need a physical space that we can attend to, yeah, just keep everybody into the same mindset of Bitcoin and tell what's new. But also like yesterday, like we watched the $6 billion man, right? Like the movie screening. That was like an amazing time here, right? Like there's a bunch of people who have the same mindset and just, you know, as a group dynamic, it's always better to appreciate these things.
Mm. Yeah, I would also maybe add that I think, you know, a place like Cypherpunkhouse, which is a physical space, you know, to that point about having a physical space versus purely digital space, there is something slightly more accelerated that happening when you're actually physically present. Of course, it's not always possible, but even, you know, residencies like Sovereign Engineering or just having a physical hub, I think they create a very different cross-pollination of ideas, right? Both technical and non-technical. And I think having that space in London, which is a difficult place for Bitcoin to succeed, I think, in many, many ways, right? As this hyper-capitalist breeding ground, really. I think it's very cool, yes. And it's like a permanent place. Well, yeah, it's a permanent place here.
I definitely feel that. I've been to a few Noster meetups in the States. And every time I leave, I come out a lot more inspired, a lot more deeper connections with people that I had only met with online. And it sort of, you know, reinforces Noster for me every single time that happens. And I think that's something I've only actually been able to experience myself personally on Noster, is just all of a sudden turning something that was previously digital into something real in meat space. Is that sort of what you guys are getting at? Like, let's get together and reinforce, you know, what we're trying to do in person?
Yeah, I think from my experience of CypherMonk's house so far, it's an open house, right? So there's people who are builders, thinkers, artists, all kind of come together, right? So again, this theme of cross-pollination, I think, is quite important. There is quite a strong emphasis on art as well and kind of cultural representation, right, to create meaning-making part of Bitcoin and Nostra to a degree, you know, to actually move it out of purely technical conversation to the side of culture and art, which I think is very important as well to have that visibility. But that's been my impression of CypherMonk House so far.
Any other opinions in the room there that we should bring in?
The crowd is silent, but they're unexcited.
They're stoked. They agree with everything Eugene just said.
Yeah,
with no caveats.
Yeah, I would add one more thing is that in terms of like the different kinds of events that I've experienced here, it's definitely been one of the more unique venues, you know, some on-site, off-site events, you know, starting with hikes or football or you know, a great variety of events, which again, I think is good to kind of bring Bitcoin out of the purely technical or even financial lens or economic lens. Yeah.
I mean, it does need to eventually. We all have to, you know, money is just money without, you know, turning it into something you can do something with in your real life. It's just kind of boring, in my opinion. Like art, you know, richness of life products, you know, buying things on a marketplace, that actually makes Bitcoin more real for me anyway, rather than just some, you know, magic token that I can shoot across, which has amazing properties. But, you know, if no one's doing anything with it, it's rather not interesting. So it's really cool what you guys are doing there. Can I poke the bear a little bit on London?
Go ahead.
I see so much stuff on Nostra about sort of the state of affairs over there in terms of free speech, maybe a police state. What is really going on, boots on the ground? What's real? What's not real? Why is something like CypherMonk House and these, you know, Nostra and Bitcoin technologies like that super important for a place like that right now?
So, I mean, as a disclaimer, I just need to say that I'm just back in the UK 2 weeks now, right? I lived in the UK for 15 years, then I left and I spent some time in Madeira and then Cyprus. But I think that the UK is probably one of the hardest places for Bitcoin to succeed, or at least for people to appreciate Bitcoin, right? And there are different reasons for that. I mean, one of them is that the pound and generally the system in the UK has been incredibly stable. You know, I think, so I'm originally from Latvia, and I think people in the more volatile historically places like Eastern Europe, they get it, you know, that the currency may collapse because it has collapsed several times, you know, so you don't really need to, it's not a theoretical knowledge in places like Eastern Europe. And I think even places like Cyprus, which is a divided country where I spent last year and a half, part of the territory is unrecognized. So in the UK, it's much harder to make the same argument at visceral level, right? It's more theoretical, you know, it's like theory. It may happen and it does happen in other places. So I think that's probably the first point, trying to make a strong case for it here. A lot of the time you run into the question, well, everything works, you know, except for some marginal cases, which are, I would say, becoming more and more frequent, as you just said, you know. The UK has a bit of a reputation for free speech problems, for economic problems. And in a way, I mean, partially that's why I'm back here, because I think there's maybe an opening, you know. I think maybe we are entering that period of time where that sort of fiat citadel has a little bit more fractures. And so it's not just a matter of sitting in a completely parallel society, right? You know, further away where it's much easier to be a Bitcoiner, but actually trying to see, are there these fractures that maybe other people can relate to more, precisely because of, I mean, the cost of living during the 2 years that I've been away, I mean, it's crazy, it's skyrocketed, you know? So the cost of living, the general sense of unrest with politics and dissatisfaction. So it's not necessarily, I'm not saying it's good for people who live here, but I think it does potentially create that more visceral lived experience, you know, which maybe is the an opening for Bitcoin and Nostr.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of parallels in the States, of course, with their rather stable system that just kind of works. It's hard to convince people to use something different. I could see how the UK shares that with a relatively stable currency and things like that. Oh, thanks for digging into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would also add, there's always the kind of the fine balance between trying to cause the change by building something purely parallel, right? I think Madeira is probably a good example of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a place like El Salvador, et cetera, where you're kind of just building a self-contained parallel community with that small but self-contained economy potentially. So that's one approach. Another approach is sort of trying to disrupt it one way or another from within, right? And there is this idea actually in Christianity about being in this world, not of this world, right? And I think it can apply to this more kind of disrupting it from within thinking, where you're operating in this hyper-capitalist space, you're trying to find different, but you're not of the space, right? And so you're trying to find different points of weakness where you can actually solve problems that people are experiencing.
Like that, in this space, not of this space.
Well, originally...
I'm going to use that, yeah.
Yeah, originally it was in this world, not of this world, right? That was...
Okay, yeah.
Right? But I think it's just generally this idea of making it, operating effectively in a certain environment where you don't fully belong in that environment, you know, ultimately. And you're trying to bring about a change.
Feel that every day. In this world, not of this world. Okay. I got that locked in. Oh, thank you for that. You guys want to share a little bit about your booking scam or your adventures as you're
something
that settled there?
Out of this world, right? Like it immediately brought like the paradox, like the Hilbert's paradox of the Grand Hotel, a hotel of infinite rooms, right? Because like last week with booking a residency here in London, went through booking.com, got, you know, a reply from the hotel basically saying like, hey, you know, like you have to submit some paperwork, you know, like your ID and stuff like that to finish off the reservation. Once I did that, they sent me a second mail saying like, hey, the discount that you had, it will only apply if you pay today, right? If you pay at the hotel, the discount that was on the website will not be applicable. So I clicked the link and the header has booking.com, but the domain name is the name of the hotel.com, right? So the domain name looked fine, but the header kind of had the styling of booking.com, which was something where I was like, okay, that's technically not allowed, right? Like you're using somebody else's UI. So I take the domain, put it in like an H verification, and it was registered 2 days ago. So that was like the only two red flags out of the entire process that prevented me from falling for this dumbass trap. But then, for example, like because Booking saw that, you know, like a lot of people got scammed, right? Because it has an infinite hotel room, so it doesn't have to oblige by any of their terms. So I went back to the hotel, and about 11 o'clock at night, there were still like 20 people in the lobby just sitting there because, yeah, they all fell for the bait. You know, like their money gone, no reservation, you know, all the stuff. And it got me thinking, like, how can you solve this, right? Because there was only one dead giveaway. And without that, I would have also fallen for this trap. Because like every time you do a reservation on Booking, they always offload you to like a third party to do like the scanning of the ID and blah, blah, blah. So there was nothing off about this entire thing. Like the domain name that they had was actually better than the actual hotel domain name. So there was nothing actually that was a dead giveaway. They also changed the phone number of the hotel, so you couldn't call them, right? Like everything was just changed. Like everything was really, really well set up. Like the people who have done this, this is not their first rodeo. And they actually, I think if I make an estimate out of this, I think they easily made like 100K in damages, like easily.
Yeah.
Cause like, if you think about like that was the thing, like they put a high discount on my room. So my room was already heavily discounted towards what, you know, the normal prices in London was. And now the rebooking is now being like dealt with by booking.com, but that is at least, you know, £1,700. For me, by myself, right? So all those people in the lobby, all those people like who had the infinite hotel room, right? Like, yeah, it's uh, it was quite crazy of a scam, because like there was no indications, no nothing that was a dead giveaway except for that little header and then the domain name check. But I have no clue on what the solution would be. My initial idea was that maybe Booking actually checks, you know, if data of the hotel is changed, you know, maybe they do some type of verification. In the Noster space, there might have been this idea of if it's an N-site, right, there is a history off of it. So you can see that the new N-site had, you know, different phone numbers and stuff like that. But even that solution is also way too technical, right? Like in this case, when an account gets compromised on a centralized entity, there is no way of you knowing who you're dealing with, right? So in some cases, it boils back to the identity problem, right? Like that.
So were they actually compromised? Is that what allowed this to happen? Or yeah, the link was compromised?
Not the link, like the booking.com account that the hotel had.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the solution to something like that? Have you with Noster keys, if the key gets compromised, it sort of is compromised, but also you still have access to it. So you can kind of competing post and say, hey, don't trust anything we're about to say, because someone else has this key as well, you know, web of trust from there. Maybe you could spin into a new web. I love that, like, you were probably the only Bitcoiner out of all the people that got attempted to be scammed, and you're the one that didn't fall for it. Right? Just like, is this like a Bitcoin fixes this thing where everybody's a Bitcoiner and no one falls for these scams?
It's super suspicious when I have to pay in fiat, you know, like it raises.
Yeah. Yeah, you're already like, oh, this is a good scam. You're like default scam.
Well, I think it was something where I thought like the identity problem is something there, right? Like if the credentials of the booking.com account were like super easy, you know, maybe it's the domain name of the hotel and then something in front of it and then, you know, a very shitty password, you know, that might be a thing, you know, to get compromised on. So if you would use keys to that extent, that would already be a higher security. But then we have the problem of key rotation, right? Like if the guy who does the booking stuff leaves the company, then you have to rotate the key. So there's like, we would have to maybe use something like Froster, like delegated keys and things like that. But so it's an interesting problem. And I think it boils down a bit to the identity thing. I'm not sure what the solution is, but just a heads up to anybody making a booking, you know, like it's.
Are you aware of any Noster based booking? Hotel booking systems, for example.
Wouldn't say hotel booking, but we do have a guy in the group doing room sharing. So shout out to Pats, who's doing, geez, I got to remember the name of this project off the top of my head.
Hoster.
Thank you. I mean, that's not like a full scale hotel situation there, Eugene, but I mean, that would be my closest answer to, you know, someone's doing something adjacent to allowing accommodations to be booked on Bitcoin and Noster rails.
Okay. I think it's closer to Airbnb.
Airbnb,
exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
That was my small rant about the infinite hotel, right? But we can touch a bit on the idea of like what the difference is, like the peripheral spaces of what it is to use Bitcoin in London versus Madeira or other places, just in general, like. Have you noticed since you've only been here like for 2 weeks, of course, but have you noticed like a difference in vibes?
Yeah, well, in a way, that's sort of, we kind of already touched on that earlier, right? I think that London is a slightly less or maybe more impenetrable space, right? For the Bitcoin use, for the Lightning use. And I think that in a place like Madeira, and I would also argue in big parts of Eastern Europe or Southeastern Europe, you could plausibly live off the Bitcoin standard, which I tried to do for some time. It was quite difficult, I'm not going to lie, you know, but it's but it is possible. And I think in London, the idea of Bitcoin is still dominated primarily by the financial narrative, you know, except for some spaces like Cypherpunk House. But I think the value is primarily seen, or the value of Bitcoin is more of the speculative asset or your investment vehicle or something like that. rather than either a technological entity or as a way to live off, you know, to create a community off. Yeah. But I think that's sort of synergistic with what we were discussing before about that visceral understanding of that things can just crash, which is completely absent here, you know, or at least in the way that I think is present in the rest of the world. Like, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I did get the chance to go to El Salvador for vacation recently, and it seemed like starting smaller, starting in a place where it was almost like they enjoyed the Bitcoin tourism. If they, you know, people were making money off that. I don't know if they were keeping it in Bitcoin or if they were just converting it to fiat right away, but the acceptance of Lightning, few different wallets there. I mean, I was impressed. I was having a good time, you know, showing my wife that, you know, this is real. And it wasn't just this crazy obsession that I had. Like this, you know, we actually bought something physical, you know, with this digital money. That, yeah, the visceral experience, I think, helps people go, oh, you know, this could be real. But yeah, will it happen in a place where you have Apple Pay working at every terminal, you know, the money, the consistency of the currency being relatively stable, or at least far less volatile than Bitcoin? You know, some of the other places you mentioned, you know, you could argue that the currency is consistently more volatile than Bitcoin, and also not volatile in both directions, consistently volatile in the bad direction. So that allows people to, like, you know, get off. I'll deal with a little bit of volatility with Bitcoin because the trend is generally up. You're going to say something there, Eugene?
Well, I was just going to say, but I also, you know, I, as I mentioned earlier, I think I'm generally quite optimistic about the UK, one of the, maybe not a lot of people, I don't know, but I think, and when I say I'm optimistic about the development of Bitcoin in the UK, right? Because I think it's a matter of finding pain points, right? And trying to connect the solution to these pain points. And that's where I sort of believe there's value in not being in a purely parallel or self-enclosed world, right? There is value in actually trying to understand what real life problems people are dealing with and how Bitcoin or Nostra can solve them. So, and I think whether it's freedom of speech, what we mentioned earlier, but I also think, you know, Bitcoin is a vote against the current system, right? And I think that's something that resonates very well with people in the UK with the current level of dissatisfaction, you know, economically speaking. So while, yes, there is a lack of that visceral experience that we keep referring to, but I think that we can connect to certain pain points, you know, in a place like the UK. So it gives me some cautious optimism.
Yeah, similar here. I think the narrative that you resonate with people is like people that are ready to say fuck the system, and they're like, okay, I'm gonna get this. So just because I can, because I want to say fuck the system.
It's like the ultimate wallet, right? Like just saying like I'm exiting the fiat system, and there's nothing that you can do, you know, about the wealth that I've accumulated and stored off, you know, outside of the regular system, right?
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, I think one of the strongest parts of Bitcoin and Nostra is this idea of credible exit, right? And I think that people, I mean, across the Western world as well, they do want to feel, or some people at least, want to feel that they can leave. You know, there's a lot of people leaving the UK at some point, you know. And I think, again, Bitcoin can offer that option. So it's a vote against the system and a practical bridge. That's basically what I'm saying.
Maybe that's a good segue into a different type of bridge, like the Maiko stuff that Ariane pushed yesterday. I'm just going to quickly read off what the application says, right? Like Maiko is an offline first peer-to-peer client for Insights, self-contained web apps served straight from a local Relay and Blossom store. Pair with people nearby over Bluetooth to form a mesh, then discover, install, and share insights with no servers and no internet required. Includes built-in chat and home screen installs for any insights. Ayan did mention that you need to have a pair of two devices for them to create a Nostra Relay Blossom Circle, and then you can use BitChat Insight app, which just publishes to your local host Relay. And then Michael does a fan out of those events. So yeah, we'll leave the link in the show notes because it's a Zap Store application. But it's what we've been talking about with the FIP stuff, right? Like in the episode of having offline websites. Ariane is front running this stuff really hard. So it's interesting to see. And yeah, we'll try to test it out maybe by next week, hopefully.
This is super fun and absolutely wild. What I love about maybe this is the AI, you know, for good kind of thing happening, but we're talking about something like FIPS and it's like pure, almost pure theory. It's 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, however many weeks ago it was. And then, you know, here we are not so many episodes later and someone's turning this into a product. It's like the turnaround time from Freedom Tech ideas into Freedom Tech products has just like shrunk a whole lot for motivated people with clankers. So I'm really into this. I'll try this out because, you know, we were having that conversation. I was like, I'll see when this actually happens. I'll see when this actually turns into a product. And Arian's like, actually, yeah, now it's a product. So here we go.
Yeah, no, Arian is quite one of the goats, right? Like he's been doing the toll gate and then the no DNS and then now the FIP stuff. So he's that man has set the direction.
He's doing it. No, you love to see it.
Then we also have a small shield to our community, right? Like Jesus came back to the open markets community. So
Jesus walks. Walks in the yeah, open markets community again. Yeah. I was messaging him about something else. I think he had heard maybe even on this podcast talking about his article, private communications over public infrastructure and his studies of the different communication protocols on Nostr that we were all sort of trying to converge around. It went way beyond, you know, NIP4 and NIP17. He wrote an update to that article that included even more communications protocols that people were experimenting on. One really interesting one that was actually coming up in the Soapbox group was the Concord protocol. I believe it's called Vector Privacy is the current app, but people are trying to make an app on Soapbox be compatible with Vector over the same Concord protocol. And I think they had it working. I think they had messages going back and forth between those. So he did a similar analysis of that protocol along with a couple other, you know, just using his framework of, you know, are these things actually private or what are the trade-offs? What are, you know, the different parties, relays, client operators able to actually see if they wanted to observe people? You know, how well are the events hidden? You know, what event kinds are we using? Of course, you know, Jesus being, you know, one of the goats, he's getting down and dirty with, you know, what's real and what's not real in terms of the promises that you can make for privacy as you're doing these things. And it's really important to take this, what I would call a sober analysis of these things, because I think there's a lot of wishful thinking with some of these technologies, or there's like a lot of, you know, it works in theory, but then in practice, you have these metrics that are observable that doesn't make it practically private. So, yeah, long-winded way of saying, I'm happy Jesus is back. And I use that as an in to get him back in the marketplace. I was like, hey, you know, you can come in, you don't actually have to say anything, just observe. I think a lot of people just hang out and don't say anything while the chatter goes on about some topic that they may not be currently interested in, but they're there and ready to hop in. And I love how Chief Monkey immediately made the joke of like, hey, everybody get to work. Jesus is back. You know, look busy.
Yeah. Jesus did the wheel, right? It's,
yeah.
No, it's good to have him back. And solid bloke. So, you know, like if we push the new spec with the four pillars a bit, you know, to the front, I'm 100% sure that we'll get some nice feedback and some nice input from him as well. Then we maybe have a small touch up on what Max Hilbrand wrote, like the Courier's New. We're not going to go too deep on it because like we'll hopefully have him on the show soonish. But the idea is that like folks in history have, you know, had free postal services. If you look through the ages before everything was centralized. So the idea was that, you know, you built some type of parallel logistics infrastructure to what we have now. And we discussed it a little bit before as well, like the idea of proxies, right? Like you ship from, instead of directly to you, you ship to somebody else, and then, you know, it becomes a bit of a chain. But yeah, there's like, we'll try to get, you know, into the weeds a bit about shipping, because it will be a recurring theme for most of our marketplaces. So whoever finds, you know, like a good solution to that will be king of the hill for quite a while. Because like Max also mentioned, like, you know, the free marketplaces, like they're almost here, right? Like we don't really have anything technical that kind of holds us back. the only thing that we have to deal with a lot of times is the shipping narrative, right? And that's why we always come to like local first. We try to find products that are close to our vicinity. But in general terms, like we also need to apply, you know, this shipping logistics and find ways to deal with that in a more decentralized fashion, right? Like so we can have a more open version of what these shipping providers actually service us.
I'm really excited for this conversation with Max because I think the article is great. It goes over a bunch of historical examples where shipping was not coordinated by the state, but still, very effective in a lot of ways. And it's always interesting to look at history as to how things were versus how things are, and then try to poke holes in the logic in terms of how our societies are now versus how our societies were then. I have so many questions for him, and I'm really excited to dive into that discussion because I think there's a lot of back and forth to be had there. And he, what I like about what he's done, he's just totally unafraid to just go there, go to time in history where, you know, the state didn't have a monopoly on violence and explore what systems were possible in sort of an alternative universe and how that might look in the future as well. So Max, if you're listening, we're going to have fun conversation around all of this.
I thought it was very, very interesting. And I think conceptually, for me, it really aligns with what really always excited me about Nostra, which is creating this. Well, parallel or independent, not just market, but I would say, I wanted to say the word society, but it does maybe a bit too broad. But uh-huh. That idea that you can essentially get different services fully independently, right?
Yeah.
And I think something like postal service is a very good example of that. You know, we can also, I mean, the things that I was very interested in is, medical services. I mean, everything that, say, government or any government usually provides. If you can enable it within the Nostra Bitcoin ecosystem, that I think gives a lot of power to that parallel. You know, that's the building block to actually enable that parallel society. So that was something that I always found very exciting about Nostra. And I like that this is a very in-depth, a kind of a call to arms that it is possible and has been done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we can always learn, you know, from history, you know, and there's so many things like Max also mentioned, like, you know, like if you look at how smugglers, you know, operate, like there's a lot of things in very different niches where people already had to deal, you know, with different types of shipping lanes and different types of shipping methods. So yeah, we'll make it a good conversation.
I'm especially interested. It comes back to what we said, something we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation, which is I'm currently in the system, but not of the system. So how do we navigate towards a legal, decentralized shipping that, you know, we do this? I think I heard someone else say this called a statist jujitsu, where you sort of use the leverage that you get, you know, through the state system to like put something on them that is a little bit more decentralized, a little bit more free without them knowing. That's kind of, I think, the way we have to go. We also had a merchant on here, Born to Be Free. John was talking about how we might, now that we have drone technology, like why can't we use that for local shipping that might be more effective in a decentralized architecture rather than a centralized architecture? And I think those are interesting ideas to explore. You know, let's mix the old historical narrative with the new, you know, high tech narrative. And we might have something that we could put together that's beautiful there. So I have no idea where it's going to go. Usually on this podcast, we like to like call crazy things that are going to happen in the future. We're going to have, you know, FIPS drones on Mars delivering packages in a decentralized manner with Bitcoin only payments. I think that's where I'm going with this one. Do you guys agree with that potential future?
I really like your descriptions.
No, I'm totally full of shit. You don't have to agree with any of what I just said.
Oh, but we already mentioned, you know, Ariane mentioned 4 or 5 weeks ago, you know, something that would come out into the future, and we're already there. So, you know, maybe in 5-6 months, you know, drones are flying on Mars. You know, things are moving so fast with AI. Who knows?
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. A few more topics where I got a jet.
Yeah, we're going to put the pedal to the metal on the last pieces here a little quickly. But the escrow guys have been, you know, pushing some more awesome things. We've been diving a little bit into the specification a bit better, but I think we also need, you know, to bring some of those guys on to come and explain a bit, you know, instead of us doing the technical narrative there. Then there's one technical narrative that I quickly wanted to dive into, which was the N-Sides Naps and Naplets, which is what Sandwich is developing. So just a quick rundown is an N-Side is just a website that's hosted on Noster relays, and a NAP is then could be a Noster client, right? It has functionality, it has something that you can interact with. And then the third leg, which is then, you know, the new thing with which Sandwich is pushing, is like Naplets. The idea that you have pieces of code which do one thing and one thing only, like they do one thing really well. And then you have a runtime, like an environment in which these Naplets can be called or like installed to an extent. And that's more to the bare bone level of the hardware device, right? So you can have a runtime that's only doing Noster stuff. And it's a very interesting long-term project. But yeah, we'll try to get into more detail like next time. And then we have one call to action. Like next week we'll have No Good on. So if you guys want to submit some questions for No Good, for maybe how he does, you know, his design process, or if you have specific things in mind, the best question, we'll get a prize. So we're tying some incentives to it. But we're trying to front run a bit of our next episode to have some good questions for No Good, for Thomas to shill.
The No Good is one of the more, for the people that don't know, he's one of the more prolific Bitcoin artists out there. I think you can still, if you've been hanging around Noster and Bitcoin spaces, you've probably seen his art on different podcast covers, different products, different. I think he's even the one that did the art on NJump. Mm-hmm. That correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've been hanging around, you've probably seen his art, and we're going to hang out with him next week and we're doing a promo. Clarify for people what the promo that we're going to be doing on that show is.
Yeah. So No Good made a book about all of his artwork that he's done in the Bitcoin space since he started. So I've been going through it a little bit, because there's also my designs that I requested from the Cypherspace build are also in there. But you get like a nice overview of all the work that he's produced over the years, together with also an insight of what the creative process looks a bit at the end, and also a good insight on what it takes for a graphic designer, you know, to find their way into the Bitcoin space and get absorbed to that level, right? Like all of his stuff is all over the place, like TabConf, like Sovereign Engineering has a bunch of their designs, and it's always like very well defined and something that's very much his style. Like you can definitely see something and point to it and say like, okay, that's probably from No Good, which I always think
very, very distinct. Yeah, you can tell, you're like, oh, this is, he almost became synonymous with the brand of some of these freedom techs. So very impressive that how he was able to like sort of weave himself into all of this.
Uh-huh. So submit your questions, and then for next episode we'll try to ring them off. That will be our wrap, right? Like we're gonna do a short show. So is there still something you want to add, Eugene?
Well, just wanted to say thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me, hanging out with us.
I mean, one thing that I would add is that, you know, I think it is great that, you know, you're covering designers and, again, people who are not just purely technologists, right? Because I think that movement from pure technology to, you know, I guess the meaning of both Bitcoin and Noster, I think there's again, a bit of a civil war going on a little bit, right?
A little bit.
In the space, right? And so I think, you know, it's not a done deal, right? That's my feeling. You know, it's not like, okay, we know what, you know, it's all been defined. We know the answer, right? So that's kind of what animates me right now about it. You know, that it's kind of, again, a little bit up for grabs almost, you know, not fully, of course, it's still tethered, but there is, there's a few openings happening basically.
You said tether, are you going to end up in the shitcoin dungeon over there at the Cypher Monk House, or
that's just the word that I used.
I'm just messing with you. Cool, guys. Well, appreciate you hanging, Eugene. Sorry for the shorter show today. I do got to run, but it's cool. We did this on the road. You guys are in London. I'm in Napa on top of the hill somewhere. So we made it happen regardless. So, cheers, everybody. Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Subscribe to the Open Markets podcast on your favorite podcast client. Follow us on Noster or on openmarkets.pub. New episodes every week. Thank you for listening, and until next time.